Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. School's out, or at least it is for my kids, and parents from Lawrence to Liberty and from Independence, Missouri to Independence, Kansas are already in a panic, wondering what their kids will do all summer with all of that time. Well, today in one of our annual rituals here on Up to Date, we've gathered some of the most well-read and best-looking librarians from the Johnson County Library System to give us their recommendations for great summertime reads for your kids. And they are Kate McNair, who will give us some recommendations for young adults. Kate, always good to have you.
Thank
Welcome
you.
Welcome back. And librarian-at-large Debbie McLeod is also here. She'll survey books for middle readers. Debbie, nice to have you, too.
Good to be back, Steve.
Good morning. And Bradley Debrick is also here. He's the youth outreach librarian. Bradley, good morning to you.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, how's the kids market these days, Kate? Lots of good books these days, or what are you seeing out there?
Oh, yeah. We're coming up on the big publishing season for young adults, the September, October, so there's lots of things to be looking forward to.
And you love this, right? This is always a time of year to get excited about.
Oh, yeah. I'm going on vacation today, in fact, and I've already got my big pile of books I'm taking with me, so I'm looking forward to reading some of the new stuff that's come out.
Even though it's work, kind of, but really it's not work necessarily,
yeah.
Sounds like. Yeah.
It's a pleasure to read these books, so I love having that job.
Deb, good stuff coming up. Are you hearing any good buzz about anything here?
Oh, yeah, lots of good things coming up. And it's children's literature has really picked up thanks to Harry Potter and Twilight. There's a lot of crossover between adults and children reading these books, and families can really, really share them. And the adults, they don't see it as a chore, not that they ever did to read, but they're interested in the books themselves for themselves as well as for their kids.
Isn't that something? Kids and parents reading the same books.
Yes, it is.
Who would have thought? Yeah. Let's go to our list here for good books to read this summer. And Debbie, you have one book up here. It's titled Wonder.
Yeah, Wonder is pretty much a wonder itself. It's gotten a lot of buzz. It's gotten many, many wonderful critiques on it. And it's the story of a 10-year-old boy, Augie, and he has been homeschooled. And the reason he has been homeschooled is that he suffers from these abnormal facial abnormalities. And so his parents have protected him and homeschooled him, and they figure now is the time for him to go out into the world. And so he enrolls in a private school, and it's told from his point of view, and he's a remarkably well-adjusted young man. He truly is. He doesn't look, you know, down on himself or anything. He is who he is. And you get his reactions to the other kids as regarding their reactions, and he just really takes it in stride. And as these kids come to know him, they see the Augie that really is there. And it's still from the point of view of Augie and then his sister, his older sister, Via, and then various friends throughout the book. So it really is an amazing book.
Abnormal facial
deformities.
Deformities, yeah. Meaning what, he can't control the muscles in his face?
No. He was it doesn't say exactly what the syndrome is, and you don't really see him until his sister describes what he looks like. But, you know, he's misshapen ears, misshapen eyes, you know, hardly any chin, and he has had a number of surgeries to correct these abnormalities, but still he doesn't look like a, quote, normal child.
Sounds like a neat book, and this would be for kids roughly what age range,
Debbie? I would say probably fourth grade on up.
Fourth grade on up.
And can I say what was really interesting, what brought her to write this story was she had had ice cream with her two kids, and this woman was at the same bench as them, and when the kids noticed her child, this woman's child, had these facial irregularities, and her children, the author's children, reacted in such a way that she felt, how would it feel like to be this child? And that was the birth of this book.
Interesting book. Again, it's titled Wonder, the author R.J. Palacio.
Palacio. Right.
Palacio. Okay. Let's move on. Bradley, you have one up here, No Sleep for the Sheep.
Yes. It's one of my favorite ones of the past year.
Yeah.
I describe this as a tongue-twisty romp through the barnyard. A poor sheep wants to go to bed, wants to get some sleep in the worst way, but all of the other farm animals will not let him get any rest.
It happens.
It does. And what I like so much about this, I spent a lot of time working with our 6x6 ready-to-read program, and the rhyming scheme and the cadence of this story really helps kids hear the smaller sounds and the words and pick out the rhyming words.
Oh, that's
and most kids that have trouble learning to read have trouble with that skill. So I focus on this book a lot when I talk about rhyming words and the smaller sounds and words. This book also uses a lot of animal sounds, and for kids who are not yet reading or speaking words, making up those sounds. I have a read aloud passage here that you'll hear some of the animal sounds that I think Stephen's going to read for us. But making up those sounds and those animal words help kids pull apart words and put them back together. So it's a learning experience, but it's also a lot of fun.
Well, you probably don't realize this, but Stephen Steigman, our producer, has a national reputation for professionalism when it comes to making barnyard animal sounds, doesn't he?
No pressure there.
You can do it, Steve.
Yeah, go. Try, okay. Go for it.
In the big red barn on the farm, on the farm, in the big red barn on the farm, a sheep fell asleep in the big red barn, in the big red barn on the farm. Then there came a loud quack at the door, and the sheep couldn't sleep anymore. Go to sleep, said the sheep to the duck at the door, and please don't quack anymore. Quack, said the duck in the barn. Shh, not a peep, go to sleep, said the sheep in the big red barn on the farm. Soon the duck and the sheep fell fast asleep in the big red barn on the farm. Then there came a loud quack at the door.
Told you.
And the sheep couldn't sleep anymore. Go to sleep, said the sheep to the goat at the door, and please don't quack anymore. Quack, said the goat in the barn. Shh, not a peep. Go to sleep, said the sheep in the big red barn on the farm. Soon the goat and the sheep fell fast asleep in the big red barn on the farm.
Well, can you tell he's a father of two and about to become the father of three? That was just great.
Well,
Stephen Steigman.
Can I get a recording of that?
Yes, absolutely.
Play it for my kids.
That book, No Sleep for the Sheep by Karen Beaumont, right, Bradley?
Correct.
What a great recommendation there. Kate, let's move on to The Way We Fall.
Yes, well, this is quite a different book than The Sheep in the Big Red Barn. this book is by Megan Crew, and it is set in a small island in Nova Scotia. And Kaylin has just moved back. She's been living in Toronto for the past 5 years, but this is her hometown on this island, and she's moved back, and she's taking this as an opportunity to start over, get a new reputation, try to meet new people, be more outgoing. But something has gone horribly wrong on the island that's kind of putting a wrench into things. And there's a plague or an illness that has spread throughout the island. And it begins with one of her new friend's fathers. And it starts as an itch that no matter how much you scratch, it doesn't go away.
Hey.
And then you get a cough and a runny nose and eventually a fever that begins to cook your brain until you go crazy. You lose all your inhibitions. You become unconscious. And people have started to die from this. And
ouch.
Kaylin's father is a microbiologist, and so he's trying to help figure out the cure. But so far, they haven't had any luck. So the CDC quarantines the island. And not long after, a storm comes through and knocks out their phones and their satellites and their internet. And so they have no communication with the mainland. And they're all on this island. They have no help, no news, no information. And people are dying, and more people are falling sick. So Kaylin's trying to survive all of this while the islanders are taking things into their own hands. And some of them are doing it for the betterment of everyone in the community, trying to make sure everyone has food and water. And some of them are just trying to help themselves. And Kaylin's stuck in the middle of it.
Sounds tense, sounds dramatic, sounds like lots of stuff.
It's fantastic. I've been really into dystopian books lately, and this one was kind of a fun, it's kind of like a dystopia because it's this little town.
Help me there.
Like a utopia gone wrong.
Okay.
It's kind of like that because it's this small town and things are going crazy and it's isolated. But I really liked the whole communicable disease part of it. It was very interesting. The author did a lot of research to try and learn more about that. And so I found it really fascinating.
And people realize how much they miss newspapers when they don't have them, right?
Oh, yeah. And the internet and even the television, they have no radio. They can't get anything. It's this very isolated little island. And without these connections, you know, I can't imagine not even knowing, you know, what's going on with how connected we are nowadays. They don't even know what's going on across the aisle there. Like, they can't even get contact to the mainland, let alone, you know, we get the New York Times and we know about what's going on in Beijing today and all that.
That would make me crazy. Again, that book, The Way We Fall by Megan Crew, that would be for kids.
I would say about 12 and up.
Yeah. Okay. Great suggestion. If you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date, and we're doing our annual summertime reading show with three librarians from the Johnson County Library System, Kate McNair, Debbie McLeod, and Bradley Debrick. Let's move on. Debbie, you have one, Bramble and Maggie, Horse Meets Girl.
Well, you know me, I always have to bring a horse book in.
You love your horses.
Yes, I do. And this is a beginning chapter book, so children who are just leaving the easy readers and are ready for something a little bit more challenging but not quite ready for a bigger book, this is a really good choice. And it tells the story of Bramble, who is a school horse, and she's kind of burnt out. She's tired of going in a circle all the time. She's tired of having all these different people ride her, and she just really wants her own person. So the owner of the riding school decides, you know, to put her up for sale and to find that perfect person for Bramble. And Maggie comes along. And it's their little story.
And Maggie loves Bramble.
Yes, she does.
I can just see it coming.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Bramble and Maggie, horse meets girl. And by all means, our listeners out there, if you want to call in and make a good recommendation for a book to read this summer, we'd like to hear from you. Children's books we're talking about. And we like it when kids call the show, too. Maybe you have a recommendation you want to make. Our phone number here, 816-235-2888. Our email address, up to date, at kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page. Bradley, you're up next. Where's Walrus? Where is Walrus?
He is on every single page, and you have to look for him.
What's one of those hidden? I love those kinds of things.
He's sort of hidden. He's hidden from the zookeeper who's chasing him through the story. But to the reader, it's very obvious where Walrus is. So you're sort of in on the joke. As kids look through this book, they, of course, can see Walrus, and they think it's funny where he's at. He might hide himself in a fountain, or he might be at a cafe counter. The kids can see him right away, but the zookeeper is a little aloof and can't find him right away. Walrus escapes from the zoo, and the zookeeper, of course, goes after him. In the course of looking for Walrus, discovers Walrus is on a high dive platform and wins this gold medal for his high dive skills. When he finally gets back to the zoo, the zookeeper installs a high dive board on his pool to keep him in place and to make him happy.
Yeah.
The best part of Where's Walrus, it's a wordless book. And I think a lot of people shy away from wordless books because there's nothing to read. But a wordless book gives a child a chance to tell the story in their own words.
Oh,
and that story can be different every time. And the illustrations by Stephen Savage in this story are very plain and simple. There's a lot of white space. So kids can focus just on the illustrations and talk about what they see. So it gives them a chance to tell the story the way they want it to be told versus some printed text that an author has written. So it's a fun book to share together as a lap book and look at the details in the photos and talk about it.
You know, every time you guys come in, I'm beginning to get that feeling once again that I miss reading to my kids when they were little. They're not so little anymore, so we don't do it anymore. But boy, it sure was good times in our house when we did so much of that. Lots of phone calls here. We're talking about great summertime books for kids. Let's go to some calls here. Cappy from St. Joseph. Cappy, good morning.
Good morning. How are you guys today?
Great, Cappy. Thanks for calling.
So I'm calling with a book that I used for my son, who was a bit of a precocious reader, but he was too afraid to read the really big books, even though, you know, at his level, he could have. So I found a book called Dragon Rider by Cornelia Fudd.
Yes.
You know this book. It's not brand new, but the words, it was a good story that he liked, and it was simple reading, but a big book. So it was a good transition book for him where he could see that it wasn't that hard to read a big, you know, thick book, and he could really enjoy it.
Well, Cappy, as soon as you mentioned Dragon Rider, I saw lots of nodding of heads here, so you picked a good one, I think.
Well, I hope other people enjoy it as much as he did.
Thank you, Cappy.
Sure.
Let's go to Susan from Parkville. Again, our number here, 816-235-2888. Susan, good morning.
Hi, how are you?
Well, thanks.
I have a question and a couple questions. The first is, when you have a kid who's in the middle grades in elementary, like second, third, my daughter reads above her grade level, but I want to avoid mature themes that are too mature.
Sure.
So do you have any recommendations for how to find books for kids like that? And then have the librarians heard about the book called The Underneath by Kathy Appelt?
Yes.
Okay, so I'd like to hear what you think about that and what ages might be appropriate for that book.
I think The Underneath would be a good choice. In fact, Kathy Appelt has a number of books out that I think would be good for your daughter. There's nothing controversial about it. It's concepts that she could easily understand. So, you know, I think she does some really, really good stuff. And as far as how to find these books, ask your librarian. Go to your local library.
That's what you're there for, right?
That's what we're there for. Mm-hmm. Feel free to ask. We don't, you know, we enjoy helping the public. And, you know, they should know what fits the requirements that you have or what you want your child to read. And there's a lot of good stuff out there. And sometimes, you know, it's not the big bestseller, but it's there.
Great. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Susan. Good luck.
Yeah, thanks.
Let's go to Zach from Kansas City, Missouri. Zach, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. How are you?
Yeah. Good. Go ahead.
Well, I wanted to talk about the Max and Ruby series of books. We have a three-year-old and a six-month-old, and they kind of work great for both of them. And we love going to the library to get them because it's a series, and you can keep kind of up on all the little lessons in each book.
That's neat.
Yeah, yes. Rosemary Wells is wonderful.
She has some seasonal books, too, so it's fun to go back and revisit those every year for Easter and for Halloween. Max and Ruby go through the same kinds of things, but each year you can go back and revisit Max and Ruby for the holidays.
All right. Well, yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Zach. Kate McNair, you're up next with Divergent by Veronica Roth.
Yes. I said I've been reading a lot of dystopias lately, and this is my favorite recommendation for those who are going through Hunger Games withdrawal.
Oh,
really? Hunger Games is a very intense book to read, and it's difficult for things to measure up afterwards. So this was my favorite book that I read after the Hunger Games that's similar. So if you have a Hunger Games reader in your life that's looking for something this summer.
That's a great recommendation.
This is a good one for that. It's set in a post-apocalyptic Chicago where their community is divided into five factions, each one valuing something different. One values honesty, happiness, information, courage. And Beatrice, the main character, her faction called Abnegation values selflessness. But Beatrice isn't a very good member of this faction. She's not as easily selfless as, say, her brother or her mother. She has trouble putting other people before herself. So at 16, everyone goes through a test, and that decides what faction they will live in for the rest of their life. So Beatrice goes into this test, and her test results are inconclusive. She's what's called divergent. She has skills that could fit into several of the factions. So she has to choose if she's going to choose Dauntless, which values courage and fearlessness, or abnegation, which values volunteerism, selflessness. And no matter what faction she chooses, she can't tell anybody she's divergent because her test proctor tells her it's dangerous and she could be killed if someone finds out. So she's trying to pick her faction and figure out what being divergent means. And all the meanwhile, the government is falling in a very dramatic fashion. And so it's a great book for after the Hunger Games, very fast-paced, lots of action, mm-hmm. jumping off of trains, hoverboards.
That's
great. It's all sorts of fun.
Wasn't it also optioned out as a film?
Yes, it was. And the sequel just came out this month. So I'm a big fan of waiting to read books until further ones in the series have come out, because there's nothing like finishing a book and the sequel doesn't come out for a year and you're just frustrated. So this is a great time to pick up that series because the sequel's already here.
So if you're withdrawing from Hunger Games and having a hard time doing it, your pick is Divergent by Veronica Roth.
Yes.
Great pick from Kate there. Debbie, tell us about The Case of the Deadly Desperados.
Well, this is the first book in a series by Carol Lawrence. She previously had done the Roman Mysteries, but now she has changed her location to the Wild West, and it tells the story of P.K. Pinkerton. He's an orphan. His father was one of the Pinkerton brothers, the detectives,
mm-hmm.
and so he feels he has a greater calling in life. He comes home one day and finds that his foster parents have been murdered, and it's been made to look like the local American Indians have done it because they're scalping, and just the mode of it just seemed like it was them, and he's out to solve the mystery. Plus, he also has this deed to land, which includes a silver mine that everyone is after. So besides, you know, trying to solve the mystery, he also is on the run from the people who did really kill his foster parents.
Ages for this book would be?
8 to 12.
Okay, The Case of the Deadly Desperados, and Zach Lewandowski from KC Currents is here to give us a little flavor of The Case of the Deadly Desperados. Zach?
My foster ma, Evangeline, used to say that when God gives you a gift, he always gives you a thorn in your side to keep you humble. My gift is that I am real smart about certain things. I can read and write and do any sum in my head. I can speak American and Lakota and also some Chinese and Spanish. I can shoot a gun and I can ride a pony with or without a saddle. I can track and shoot and skin any game and then cook it over a self-sparked fire. I know how to cure a headache with a handful of weeds. I can hear a baby quail in the sagebrush or a mouse in the pantry. I can tell what a horse has been eating just by the smell of his manure. I can see every leaf on a cottonwood tree. But here is my problem. I cannot tell if a person's smile is genuine or false. I can only spot three emotions: happiness, fear, and anger. And sometimes I even mix those up. Also, Sometimes I do not recognize someone I have met before. If they have grown a beard or their hair is different, then I get confused. That is my thorn. People confound me. And now my thorn has got me killed.
Zach, thank you. And boy, I wish I had that skill to be able to know what a horse has been eating by the smell of its manure. I haven't been able to do that
yet. I think you really want that.
I haven't picked that up yet.
I think, Debbie, you have that skill, don't you?
Yeah, come out to my farm, yeah.
After all that time with horses, you should have that, Debbie. Yes. I think that's right. Bradley, tell us about a book, The Rumor.
The Rumor, I was first attracted to this because of the cover. The cover looks like newspaper clippings, just articles that someone has cut out of a newspaper and then plastered onto a scrapbook or a poster board. The Rumor is by Monique Felix, and it's essentially the story of the old children's telephone game where you whisper a sentence to one child and they whisper it to someone else, and then the whole story is out of context.
Yeah.
In this case, Rupert Rabbit, on the very first page, who is an avid reader of his morning newspaper, reads a story that there's a wolf nearby, and that sends him into a tailspin. He then tells it to someone else who gets a story a little wrong, tells it to someone else who gets a story even more wrong, until the very end the story actually gets to the wolf himself, who is a valued part of this community, and it's all just completely blown out of proportion. It's a deceptively complex 24-page picture book. There's lots of different layers and levels to the story. First of all, the game of telephone is the plot. Second of all, the animal names match their animal type. So Rupert, Rabbit, Edgar, Elephant, Antoine, Alligator. Mm-hmm. Alphabet-savvy kids will pick up on that right away. Kids that don't know their alphabet, you can use that as a teaching tool. And then when each animal embellishes the story, they embellish it in a way that reflects their own character. So when Antoine the alligator talks about how vicious and ferocious his wolf is, he describes it as having so many teeth that he can devour you in a single bite. Well, Antoine alligator would have so many teeth that he could devour you in a single bite. So there's lots of layers and things to discuss in The Rumor. It's just a really fun, quick little short picture book read aloud.
Kids have to be about how old to grab this book, Bradley?
I would say anywhere from 3 and up. Kids who are starting to get names and shapes and can recognize humor and funny. The pictures in here are great for younger kids because they're pretty bold. The animals are pretty boldly illustrated. So I think 3 and up, 4 and up could really get the letter play and some of the word play.
Again, that book, The Rumor by Monique Felix. Okay, and again, if you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date, and we're talking about great books for kids to read this summer. And if you have a recommendation, or if one of you kids out there has a recommendation, we'd like to hear from you. 816-235-2888, our email address, update@kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page. Kate, tell us about the Scorpio races.
Yes, this book is by Maggie Stiefvater, and it's set on the fictional island of Thisbe, which I think is probably somewhere near England. And every November, these water horses rise out of the ocean and they ride along the beach. And they're not your normal horses. Thankfully, they're not like what Debbie has on her farm. They are carnivorous horses. And the people of Thisbe capture these horses, they tame them, and they ride them in something called the Scorpio Races for money and honor.
Wow.
And every November, the beaches are painted with their blood. So this story is told in alternating perspectives from Sean Kendrick, whose father was a rider in the Scorpio Races, and he now rides in the Scorpio Races after his father is killed. He's a 4-time champion, and he's going for a 5th time, and he's hoping to be able to buy his horse. They're called the Kapil Ishka. And the other story is told by Puck Connolly, who's about a 16-year-old girl whose parents have been killed by the Kapil Ishka, and her family's running out of money. Their house is going to be repossessed. So she decides to very radically join these races and be the first woman to ever compete. And obviously there are people who do not want a woman to compete, and the two form an uneasy alliance.
Hmm. Wow.
Yes.
A whole lot of stuff.
It's a fabulous story. And my favorite thing is this is a really great audiobook. And I think it'd be good if you have kids maybe 12 and up, it would be great for a car ride. There's lots of good tension, character development, mm-hmm. and these races and the horses are just so – they drive the story so dramatically. It's a really great family read, I think.
And a great one for Hunger Game fans, too.
Yes.
Hunger Game fans again. Okay, the Scorpio Races. Eric Baker, one of our interns with our news departments here to read from the Scorpio Races.
He is small and dark on the back of the red stallion. Already his hands work ceaselessly on the reins to keep the horse in place. The motion twists the bits in the horse's mouth. I watch his head rocking to and fro. It's not how I would have done it, but I'm not up there. I want to tell my father to mind how the stallion spooks to the right, how I think he sees better out of his left eye. But instead I say, See you when it's over. We nod to each other like strangers. The goodbye unpracticed and uncomfortable. I am watching the race from the cliffs when a gray Ishka horse seizes my father by his arms and then his chest. For one moment, the waves do not attack the shore, and the gulls above us do not flap, and the gritty air in my lungs doesn't escape. Then the gray water horse tears my father from his uneasy place on the back of the red stallion. The gray cannot keep its ragged grip on my father's chest, and so my father falls to the sand, already ruined before the hooves get to him. He was in second place, so it takes a long minute before the rest of the horses have passed over the top of his body and I can see it again. By then, he is a long black and scarlet smear half submerged in the frothy tide. The red stallion circles, halfway to a hungry creature of the sea. But he does as I ask. He does not eat the thing that was my father. Instead, the stallion climbs back into the water. Nothing is as red as the sea that day. I don't think often of my father's body strung out through the reddening surf. Instead, I remember him as he was before the race. Afraid. I won't make the same mistake.
Thank you, Eric. Again, that's from the Scorpio races. Let's go to some phone calls here and go to Becca from Olathe. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have my son is going into second grade. He'll be 8. And I was thinking about doing kind of an adventure with him this summer and reading The Adventures of Tom Sawyer and then Huck Finn and then going up to Hannibal at the end and kind of going through what we've just read. But I wanted to make sure your panel thought that was age-appropriate for him.
Her son's 8 years old, Deb.
I think he'd be fine. It's a read-aloud, and she can, I don't think there's anything really complex that he wouldn't be able to understand. And if there's something that she's unsure about, you can always paraphrase as well. If you want to give him the experience and especially tie it into Hannibal, I think it's a great idea.
Do you think that do we need to do both or all the series of books?
No, I would do Tom Sawyer because Tom Sawyer, Huck Finn has a lot more into it that is a little bit more mature than Tom Sawyer. I think Tom Sawyer would be a really good choice to read aloud and then, take him to Hannibal and show him.
Okay, fun. And I'm excited about this.
Great idea. Nice thing about doing a read aloud on your own pace versus a school assignment where you have to have it read in a certain period of time is you can stop and you can really talk about the things that are confusing or different or out of place. You know, Tom Sawyer was written many, many, many years ago, and phrasing and language has changed, and that will give you a chance to talk to him about the words and about the phrases that may be unfamiliar that he wouldn't necessarily have if he was reading it for a school assignment in middle school. So I think it's a fine idea.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're
good
welcome.
Luck with it.
Enjoy.
Have a good trip. Yeah. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Let's go to Bradley from Lenexa. Bradley, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Well, thanks.
When I was a child a long time ago, I lived around the Phantom Toll Booth by Jules Pfeiffer, and I wanted to recommend it to anybody who wants to jar their child imagination today. It's a wonderful book. The Milo gets a toll booth, a pretend toll booth for his birthday, and a car you can ride in. He rides through the toll booth, and he's in a whole new place, and everything happens that's it's unusual. I don't know how I can explain it. He has a lot of imaginative things. He thinks about, this would be a good idea, and all of a sudden he's bounced from the beach out to an island, and someone tells him he's just jumped to conclusions.
That sounds great.
Yeah, great book.
Phantom Toll Booth by Jules Pfeiffer, right, Bradley?
Norton Jester is the author of Phantom Toll Booth, and that was really considered one of the first true fantasy books for middle grade readers.
Yes.
It was published in the 60s, and it was one of the first fantasy books that was true fantasy for middle readers.
That sounds great. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation about great summertime books for kids with Kate McNair, Debbie McLeod, and Bradley Debrick, all from the Johnson County Public Library. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. And welcome back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed our conversation yesterday with Congressmen Cleaver and Yoder from the 3rd District of Kansas and the 5th District of Missouri, you'll find it in all of our previous broadcasts at kcur.org. Tomorrow on the program, we talk with, get this, I'm saying it right, Twisted Sister frontman Dee Snider about his rocker past and his new Broadway album. Twisted Sister frontman Dee Snider will be here tomorrow. This hour, we're talking great kids' books with three librarians from the Johnson County Public Library System, Kate McNair, Debbie McLeod, and Bradley Debrick. And Debbie, you're up next with a book for 8 to 12-year-olds. The book is Cold Cereal.
Yes, this is by Adam Rex, who he wrote The True Meaning of Smeck Day, which is very popular with kids. And this takes place in the present, and it's got a lot of fantastical elements in it. And it tells the story of Scott, who starts noticing these very strange creatures, magical creatures, and nobody else can see them. So he's wondering what is going on. His mother has been sent away to some rainforest in South America. His father is separated from his mother and is over in overseas. And so it's basically him and the babysitter. And in their town is this company, Good Co., which makes cereal. And something strange is happening with this cereal company. There's a lot of demands. And where do all these weird creatures fit in? And it really is a nice little mystery. A lot of fun in here. Adam Rex is a humorous writer. He does picture books. He does junior novels. A really good read aloud as well.
That sounds good. Cold Cereal by Adam Rex. Okay. How about Bradley? Tell us about Neville.
Neville is a very gentle, heartwarming story. It's by Norton Jester, who's the same author your last caller just mentioned, The Phantom Tollbooth. It's the same author. Norton Jester's last five books have all been picture books, and this is his latest. A young boy moves to a new town where he is described as where it was quiet and where he didn't really want to be. And the worst part about it was that he has no friends. And I think most kids have been in some situation where they felt very alone or afraid or uncomfortable. And this takes a lot of those fears and puts them into this boy. I've chosen I hope it's not too long of a read aloud passage, but I think it really gives you an idea of the sadness and the ingenuity that this boy has in learning how to make friends and how to fit into this town.
Well, KCUR's Sally Daly is going to read a little bit from Neville.
Nobody asked him about moving. They just told him. You'll love it, they said. That's what they always said when they knew he wouldn't love something. So now he had a new house where he'd never feel at home, and a new school where nobody knew him. Now, class, here is the new boy I told you about, he imagined the teacher saying. He comes from the South Pole, and you can all make fun of him as much as you want. And, of course, there were no friends. That was the worst part. No friends. The boy sat quite still on the front steps. His mother was standing just inside the doorway. I know it's hard, she said in her soft mother's voice. Just give it a chance. I think everything is going to be fine. He didn't look up. She came down the four steps and sat next to him. Maybe you'd like to take a little walk around the block. You might even meet someone. Yeah, sure, he mumbled. Like you can make new friends just by walking down the block. But there wasn't much else to do, so he pulled himself to his feet and slowly shuffled away. He moved along, looking at the houses without much interest. When he had almost reached the end of the block, he stopped and stood perfectly still for a moment, as if he wasn't sure what he was going to do. Then he turned around slowly, put his head back, took a deep breath, and called out, Neville! Nothing happened. He cupped both his hands around his mouth, and now he shouted, Neville!
Well, thank you, Sally. That's Neville by Norton Jester, right?
Correct.
Okay. Some recommendations from our readers here. One listener wrote in, The Girl Who Could Fly by Victoria Forrester. Ring any bells? A Girl Who Could Fly. Tricia writes this, Looking Like Me by Walter Dean Myers. Jeremy sets out to discover all the different people mm-hmm. that make him who he is, including brother, son, writer, and runner. Also, a favorite teen recommendation that Tricia recommends, If I Stay by Gail Forman. Mm-hmm. While in a coma following an automobile accident that killed her parents and younger brother, 17-year-old Mia, a gifted cellist, weighs whether to live with her grief or join her family in death. And she says it's an incredible audiobook, too.
Yes, it is. And in fact, yeah. The sequel just came out last year. Mm-hmm. to the
where
book.
She went. Mm-hmm. It has the cello music in it, which I think is what makes it so amazing. You really get connected to Mia.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And Lori writes, I have a teen book to recommend, The Silence of Murder by Dandy Daly McCall. The plot, the murder of a baseball coach. The accused is 18-year-old Jeremy Long, who hasn't spoken a word in 9 years. His 16-year-old sister is the only person who believes her brother is innocent and the only one determined to prove it. This won the year's Edgar Award for Best Mystery in this age group. Dandy is a native of Hamilton, Missouri, now lives in Ohio.
Yeah, and I think mysteries are really becoming much more popular. Suspense, mystery. Mm. I love that they're coming in. I'm horrible at reading mysteries because I always guess wrong as to who the killer is or whatever.
Do you skip ahead and read sometimes the end?
No. I would never do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Kate, tell us about, you're up next with, what do we got here?
Cinder,
yes,
by Marissa
please.
Meyer, and it's the beginning of a series of fairy tale retellings, and this is a retelling of Cinderella that's set in New Beijing. It's about 100 years after World War IV, and the city is being attacked by this plague, and lots of people are dying, and they're using cyborgs like Cinder as test subjects to try and find a cure. And Cinder's ever-so-kind stepmother has volunteered her to be a test subject in return for some government payouts. So Cinder is injected with this plague, and they're testing it on her, and she discovers something about herself and her history. And in the meantime, of course, there is a handsome prince who has a broken android who stops by Cinder's mechanic shop. And as you might imagine, there is a lost, instead of shoe, it's a foot this time, because she is a cyborg, so she is missing a foot. And it's an interesting twist on the tale. There's going to be 5 books in this series. They're all set in the same time period, but each one is a retelling. I really liked it. It was a fun sci-fi twist on Cinderella.
Mm-hmm. So that's Cinder by Marissa Meyer. Mm-hmm. Okay. Debbie, how about the book The Mighty Miss Malone?
Well, this is by Christopher Paul Curtis, and he wrote Bud Not Buddy, which was a Newbery Award-winning book, as well as a Coretta Scott King Award winner. And a lot of readers asked about this one very small character that was in the book, Dezza Malone, and he finally decided to tell Dezza's story. So this is the story of 12-year-old Dezza during the Great Depression. Her father has gone off in search of a job, and the family is tired of waiting, and they decide to go after him.
Okay, Danny Alexander here from our staff is going to read from The Mighty Miss Malone.
A long, shiny black car stopped in front of the house. My smiling brother and a man jumped out. Ma, Dezza, this is Marvin. He can carry our stuff to his girlfriend's house, and for $5 we can stay there for a week. Mother and me looked at Marvin. His skinny, skinny mustache matched the rest of him. He was dressed in a fancy suit that had such sharp creases on the trousers that if you brushed against them, they'd cut you like a razor. His shoes and hat were the exact same color as the suit, and so clean that he looked like a movie star. A hunk of gold on his finger sparkled like the sun. When he took off his hat and tipped it at us, his hair was jet black, slicked back and wavy. He said, "Marvelous, absolutely marvelous to make your acquaintance, young ladies." Mother looked at him for the longest time before she said, "Hello. Jimmy, can I talk to you for a minute, please?" "Sure, Ma. Give me a minute, Marv." "Cool." Mother and Jimmy and me walked to the side of the house. Mother said, "James Edward Malone, isn't that the man they call Marvelous Marvin Ware?" "Yeah, isn't he great? He's going to help." Mother snapped. "Isn't he the numbers man?" "Yes, Ma." She slapped the back of Jimmy's head. "How on earth do you know him?" "Ow, Ma! He's heard me singing in the park. He's always liked my voice." "The numbers man?" "Yes, Ma, he ain't so..." "You're riding in a car with the numbers man?" I said, "Mother, what's the numbers man?" "Jimmy knows exactly who he is. He steals poor people's pennies with a gambling scheme," Jimmy said, "and he's the best. Always pays off. He's the honestest numbers man in Gary." Mother looked at the pile of boxes on the sidewalk, sighed, and reached in her pocketbook. She counted out 5 $1 bills and gave them to Jimmy. Any port in a storm.
That's Danny Alexander reading from The Mighty Miss Malone. Okay, just time for a couple more. Bradley, I spy with my little eye.
I have noticed recently a big trend in high-quality nonfiction books for young readers. And I think for the longest time that was kind of an overlooked market. This is one nonfiction book. It's a sort of an interactive guessing game of animals. And there's die-cut pages. As you turn the page, you see the color of the animal and just the animal's eye. And then the words, "I spy with my little eye," something that is gray. And from those clues, the child has to guess that it's an elephant or a fox or a lion. So I'm noticing a lot of nonfiction books, and this is one I recommend it for ages 4 and up, but rethinking it, I think much younger kids would appreciate this one as well because they can make the sounds or they will recognize some of these animals. But this is just one nonfiction book that I chose to bring that has a really strong appeal for young kids to play with and look at over and over and guess what the animal is.
I Spy with My Little Eye by Edward Gibbs, right?
Yes, correct.
Okay. Kate, The Statistical Improbability of Love at First Sight.
Yes, this is by Jennifer E. Smith, and I just love this one because it's a sweet love story, and that's what it is, and it's fantastic. It all takes place on a flight from JFK to London Heathrow over about 7 hours and then a little bit after their arrival, and it's a claustrophobic 17-year-old named Hadley who's on her way to London to be in her father's wedding to her soon-to-be stepmother. She's dreading the whole event. She hasn't talked to her dad in 2 years. She doesn't want to be there or visit, and she happens to sit next to Oliver, a first-year Yale student who's headed home to London to visit his family. Mm. And the two of them strike a note together.
And off we go.
Yes.
The Statistical Improbability of Love at First Sight. Debbie, let's wrap this up with Forgive Me, I Meant to Do It.
Well, this is a series of original poems by Gail Carson Levine, and she was influenced by a false apology poem by William Carlos Williams. And false apology poems are poems that are kind of apologies, but not really.
Okay, and Greta Gwendolyn from KCUR staff is going to read from Forgive Me, I Meant to Do It.
This is just to say, I have shortened my nose with your saw, because honestly, telling lies is so much fun. Forgive me, I don't care about becoming a real boy.
And we're browsing ahead.
This is just to say, I have torn down the water spout which you obsessively wanted to climb up and slide off forever. Forgive me. Kick your habit, spin a web, catch a bug.
Thank you very much. Well, we are out of time. A complete list of all the books we talked about today, as well as many others we didn't get to, you can find them all at kcur.org. Thank you all for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
Always good to have you. Kate McNair, Debbie McLeod, Bradley Debrick, all from the Johnson County Public Library.